welcome to another exciting show of Nest in Style, where we bring you home and garden tips for seasonal living. I'm Jamie Jenkins of ahamodernliving.com, and I have a special guest. But first, Teresa O'Connor is actually getting ready for a fabulous trip to Bologna, Italy. You know, we're just not set up for a road show quite yet. So she's actually just going to take herself to Italy. She's going to have a lovely cooking show and bring us back some wonderful tips on how to cook some really fabulous Italian cuisine with fresh food, might I add. But today I have a special guest. Her name is Robin Haglund of the Seattle area. She is a garden coach and garden designer. Her website is gardenmentors.com. And she is an also contributing blogger to gardenhelp.org, and she will later explain the differences between the two and how these services can help you in the garden. And you also have an exciting announcement, do you not, Robin?
I do. I am going to be writing in the pro section for Fiskars.com coming up pretty shortly here. There are a few of us that will be writing, and I certainly look forward to bringing some pruning tips to them as well. I mean, they are the tool makers, and super excited about getting involved with them.
Yeah, and what not a timely announcement, because we're going to talk about pruning today. So that's so cool.
Yeah, I know. I'm super excited.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
What an amazing opportunity. So very cool. Before we get on with the show, I always have announcements that I need to make to everybody. If you have not gone to the website, which hopefully most of you have, and you're listening to us for the first time on iTunes, we actually have a website. It is the Nest in Style podcast is on AHA Home and Garden, and that's spelled AHA homeandgarden.com. That's where you can see all the helpful resources that Robin and I are going to be talking about today, as well as other past episodes of resources that you can find on other websites. And we have a fabulous fall giveaway, which you're going to want to come to the website to get more information on that. I'll just give one little tiny hint on one of the fabulous giveaways that we're giving away this week. Giveaway. Anyway, it's a $50 gift certificate to Brent and Becky's Bulb. I mean, that's
Yay.
It's just one little teeny part of the giveaway, but dang, thank you, Brent and Becky's Bulbs. And let's give a special thanks to our guest host today, Robin Haglund, for hooking us up with a really cool Fiskars gift set. Once again, come visit our website at www.ahahomeandgarden.com for details on how to win. I don't know about you, but bulbs are something that I'm getting used to incorporating into the garden. I like daffodils. They're kind of like, you know, who doesn't like daffodils coming up in the spring, especially here in the Northwest? It's like the first spring color of the season. What about you, Robin?
Love them. I love all the super little ones. They seem to be my favorite. They're like the little tete-a-tete yellow,
Ooh, yes.
Early blooming daffodils. They're tiny, you know, they're the size of a crocus. And crocus, maybe one of my favorite flowers, maybe probably because it comes up through the snow. I mean, that and snowdrops, right? Lovely. I want that gift certificate.
Well, stay tuned. We have an exciting show today, folks. What show is not exciting? I don't know, but today we're going to have an interview later on with Billy Goodnick. But I also asked Robin to come along, first of all, because we were talking about pruning. Fall is, I think, mistakenly known as a great time for pruning. Is that not right, or is that right?
I get so many calls, you know, September, October, November, I need you to come out and we need to prune my garden to get ready for winter. And my reaction to that is usually, you know what? Probably not. We probably need to take a look at your garden. There are probably a lot of things you can be doing, but pruning probably isn't it. I don't want you to go in there and do a lot of stimulating of new growth, which can happen with pruning in fall. You know, plus if you go hacking on all your shrubs and trees this time of year, you're going to have to look at all those hacks, right? Why not wait until later in the spring, late winter? Do it then. Do it after the trees lose their leaves, when you can see the structure of the plant a little bit better. And a lot of plants have already set up their buds to bloom for next year. So if you go cheering off, you know, your Sarcococca, for instance, you're not going to get that fantastic early winter bloom. It's going to be gone. You're going to cut it all out. So not a big fan of a lot of fall pruning. That being said, a lot of cleanup, a lot of work you can do, but maybe hold off on that pruning for now.
Now, let's maybe just classify some different pruning, because I know, like, if you have a dead branch or maybe you're, is that appropriate this time of year?
Oh, sure. If you've got something dead, broken, you know, things like that, go ahead and take them off. Make sure you're cutting to a point of origin. And by that, I mean cutting to where a branch meets another branch, not just randomly chopping, because that can stimulate some crazy growth. But sure, if you've got things you need to clean up, go ahead and go for it. Just be judicious about it. Know what kind of plant you're working on so you're making smart moves with those pruners. Keep them sterilized. Use sharp tools. Plants don't have immune systems, so they don't do any healing. They have to do this thing where they wall off their healthy parts from a cut or a site for disease. So we want to make sure we're not spreading the disease around on our tools, and that we're just being smart about what we're doing. If it's raining out there and you've gotten a fungal infection and you're cutting on your plant, you might just spread it around on the plant. Next spring, what happened? My plant's dead. Well, you may have just done it to your plant.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm guilty of that. Spreading around my powdery mildew that I talked about in my last show. I was like, yeah, it just wasn't on my pumpkins. It was everywhere. So how do you clean your tools? I mean, are you supposed to like stick it in the dishwasher or, you know, I'm kidding.
I wish it were as easy as that. No, you know, and it's not that hard to keep them sterilized. I've got to throw some props out to Dr. Linda Chalker Scott for her research in this area. Her book, The Informed Gardener, is a fantastic resource if you want to learn more about it, or even her website of the same name. But rubbing alcohol, wiping down with that, that's a good way to go. If you're like me and you tear up your hands in winter and you don't want to use rubbing alcohol, you can go to things like liquid Lysol, Listerine antiseptic. You can use your flame weeder. Flame off your tool, firewood.
You have a flame weeder? Do you have a flame weeder?
Oh, yeah, I have a flame weeder. They're fantastic. There's a whole other discussion, right?
You and me, we're going to have another call next spring talking about flame weeders. Interesting.
Oh, I love my flame weeder. Do not use it to kill your spider webs. Somebody inevitably is going to win a Darwin Award one of these years, because every fall you hear about the person that tries to burn off their spider webs with a flame weeder. Not what they're made for, people. No. So, you know, to get back to the sterilization of tools, a lot of options out there. I stay away from things like bleach, really corrosive. I have destroyed myself a really nice pair of shears trying to sterilize them with Clorox or some kind of bleach. I don't know what brand it was. But yeah, stay away from that.
That's good to know because I have actually read that, making a bleach solution.
Mm-hmm. It'll work. You just need to use it for a longer period of time, and it's very corrosive. When you've got things like Lysol, Pine-Sol, rubbing alcohol, for goodness sakes, you know, most everyone has at least one of those things in their house.
Absolutely. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I keep a bottle of Lysol in my truck and wipe down my tools. Depending on what I'm working on, it might be between every cut. If it's a tree that I know is particularly susceptible to disease, it might be at the beginning and the end of a job if I feel like I'm in a pretty safe space. You know, a lot of diseases you don't know until you send them off to lab testing.
There always kind of seems to be, you know, the fear of killing your plant. And so people are apprehensive about taking their pruners to a shrub. Actually, you know, some people go crazy, and that's what really covers. You know, we'll see some crazy pruning jobs that some people do down in the Santa Barbara area, but others don't prune at all. And, you know, their shrubs are like growing up into the eaves of their houses. You know.
Oh, the rat ladders?
Oh, yeah. Is there a name for that? Rat ladders.
Oh, that's what I call them. If there's a plant too close to the house and it's going right up to the eaves or into the gutters, yeah, that's just a rat ladder. You're just inviting them right into your roof, right?
Oh, ugh. Nice.
So yeah, pruning away from the house, that's a great thing. Any inspector will always tell you that's the first thing you've got to do. I don't know that there's any one plant that's like notorious for needing a lot of pruning or not. I mean, think about it, in nature, plants do just fine without being cut on. You know, there's no gardener out in the forest that's, you know, working on those big trees. They're doing just fine on their own. We're generally doing it for aesthetics, sometimes for safety. You mentioned broken branches and things like that. But as far as there being one particular type of plant that you need to prune on, I don't know that there is.
Okay. Well, and I've also heard, I think what made it easier for me, the one tip that was like, okay, maybe I can do this, was never prune more than a third of a shrub at a time.
Right.
So
right.
Then I thought, okay, that's at least a guideline for me to know that I can prune, mm-hmm. but not kill my plant.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the one third rule is pretty standard. Certainly there are plants that you can cut hard to the ground and they will regain their height the following year. There are others that you really don't even want to take a third out. So you think about this thing with plants and not having immune systems and having to create these compartments. It's called compartmentalization, right? Where if you look at a tree where a branch has come off and you see these donuts on the trunk, right? That's a part of a series of walls that the plant's setting up to protect itself. So when you've got a big tree and an old tree and you take off big limbs, that percentage number needs to go down because it takes a lot more energy out of this plant for it to protect itself from what just happened. So I do like the one-third rule, but you know, like with any rule, they're always there to be broken.
There you go. Rules are meant to be broken, and you're just going to have to try and fail. Yep. I think that's the biggest thing is know that you just might.
Yeah. What's that saying? If you're not killing plants, you're not pushing yourself as a gardener. I kill stuff all the time, you know?
I have my fair share, so no right. worries there. Well, great. Any other tips that we haven't talked about that you think some beginners or maybe even some people who have gardened for a while but just have kind of been too scared to start pruning?
Yeah. Well, one thing I would say, you know, tools-wise, I really prefer pruning shears that are called bypass shears, and they're like a scissor. You know, the blade passes by the opposite side. That gets you a nice clean cut. I prefer those to what are called the anvil pruners, and that's where the sharp edge smashes. The plant needs a nice clean cut to be able to properly set up these protective walls. And I find bypass shears do a really good job of that. I also really love a folding handsaw. I like it to fold so I can fold it up, lock it, stick it in my pocket. Those are great. And I use those. I can drop a pretty big limb off of a tree using folding handsaw. I am seriously chainsaw chicken. I don't use power tools that way. So I'll use drill.
You have a flamethrower for weeds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But well, chainsaw. Okay.
Not quite what you're imagining, but yeah, I do. It's fantastic. You know, we've all got our levels. So that's actually brings up a really good point. Find your level of comfort. If it's not something that you're comfortable doing, there are a lot of professionals out there that can do it for you. And if you're going to hire someone to do your pruning, ask them questions around some of the things that you and I are talking about today, right? Make sure they understand these things about plants not having immune systems and that they need to be able to create compartmentalization and that you don't want to stimulate a lot of new growth in the fall going into winter. If a business can answer those questions effectively, they're probably going to do a good job on your garden. If they can't, they may not care, or they may not know, right? They're different levels. They may be in the business of shearing all the time so that they get a lot of crazy growth, so they have to come back and shear again. And also keep in mind, new gardeners, plants don't grow in triangles, circles, and squares. We don't have to prune them that way. Natural pruning, cutting out the dead from the interior, thinning them, letting in light and air, it's going to create a healthier environment. It's going to create a healthier plant. It's going to make a prettier garden for you, too.
Okay, those are some really great tips, Robin. Now, some people may be listening to this and be like, yeah, okay, now I feel like I could do it. Others might be like, you lost me like 5 minutes ago. And this is where somebody like you comes in, because there is, like, your business, gardenmentors.com, right? And then you also had mentioned on your Facebook page, gardenhelp.org. Now, explain the differences and how people can benefit from these services.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I have a business, Garden Mentors, and we offer gardening consulting and design services. So if you just need some help getting started, understanding your personal garden space, Garden Mentors can come out and send a consultant out and help you understand what plants you have, when to prune them, how to care for them, how to water them, yada, yada, yada. That's what we do. I really focus my business on empowerment. I want people to take ownership of their spaces. And by taking ownership, sometimes that can also be understanding which battles you want to fight, which you want to job out. So we do a lot of that work. I also believe in writing to share. And so I began blogging at gardenhelp.org as a representative of Garden Mentors to bring a lot of the knowledge, observations, experiences that I encounter as a professional and as a personal gardener. And I've also met quite a few other people that have contributed to the blog as well, certified risk assessment arborist, a moss specialist, you know, the variety of people. really interested in being a part of that. I mean, that's why it's a .org. Bringing in a lot of different people is really the goal, and building on empowerment and good information.
What if somebody's listening to this somewhere on the East Coast? Is there going to be some resources for them on gardenhelp.org? Is this kind of a nationwide website?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Gardenhelp.org, we have a variety of writers coast to coast. And certainly if you're looking for a garden coach anywhere, feel free to get in touch with Garden Mentors. We'd be happy to talk to you about finding you the right help. We're not just limited to Seattle.
There you go. All right. There's help for everyone. Now let's get on to my interview with funny guy Billy Goodnick, who is a Santa Barbara-based landscape architect, educator, and writer. You can also catch his Cool Green Gardens blog, which features sustainable landscape design, on finegardening.com. I'm sitting here with the lovely Mr. Billy Goodnick.
Dangerous but lovely is what I go by.
Dangerous but lovely. So I don't know if you guys have seen Billy out there, doing his thing, but today we're going to talk to him about his new Crimes Against Horticulture. And he's got this Flickr page of these really seriously, dramatically hacked up plants that people have displayed and shown off in their front gardens. And we're going to talk a little bit about it, and we're going to learn from these people's mistakes. Right, Billy?
Yeah, we're going to have just a little bit of fun ripping someone a new one.
So first, Billy, if you could just tell us, where did you get the idea to create this Crimes Against Horticulture?
Well, I teach and I lecture a lot, and I just think it's always nice to show people some bad examples, partly to get a laugh, and partly I think it's instructive to look at what people do wrong and explain why it's wrong, because my wife's going deaf in her left ear. We drive down the street, and I scream at people's landscapes. And if I happen to turn my head to the right while I'm driving, you know, her left ear is right there. So mainly this is just to save my wife's hearing.
I got you. But seriously, Billy, some people have said, hey, you know, if you like it, if you think it looks good, then, you know, go for it. But, I mean, obviously you don't have that same frame of mind when you're trying to encourage people to garden.
Yeah. Well, it's two things. The aesthetic is one thing, and I do believe that fugly, that's a contraction, F apostrophe ugly, that fugly's in the eyes of the beholder, and I can't argue with you whether you think something's beautiful or not. But if in making something fugly, you're also doing something that's environmentally harmful, all the head shears, the noise, or actually ruining plants so that they just don't recover from it, and you're actually pretty much slowly throwing the plant away, that gets me pretty ticked off.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had talked about that before. It's kind of a lack of experience that some homeowners or, you know, people who are new to gardening, they go to a nursery, they see it in a cute little 1 gallon pot, and they don't really think that this could possibly get to be a 5x10 kind of shrub.
There's no excuse for that anymore, because just about any nursery you go to, there's a plant tag in it at a minimum. Although you can't always believe everything. There's some plant stickers that I read that go, okay, on what planet will it grow that way? Because it's never grown that way here. But generally, you should be able to get at least the basic information. Bottom line is every plant grows, and you know, you can't expect it to be that cute little size. The analogy I use is you live in a little Airstream trailer, you know, about 100 square feet, and you decide you need a companion, so you go to the pound and you get a dog, but you forget to ask if it's a Chihuahua or an Irish Wolfhound. You know, you got to sort of check right plant, right place.
That's right.
If it gets to a certain size, it just makes sense to put the plant in a space that accommodates how big it'll grow. And then you don't have to touch it. I think nature knows best what a plant should look like, and left alone, they're far more beautiful. They have shape, they have, you know, the flowers are in the right place, and they don't look like pieces of furniture.
I know, which you do have one right here. Let's see.
Well, this is the tabletop model. Okay, we're looking at a picture that at my Flickr space, or my Flickr site, the title is Discs in Space. The plant is a Ficus retusa nidida. It's called Indian laurel fig. They're real popular around California, and it becomes a massive tree. We have them digging up sidewalks and streets all over Santa Barbara, and they get about, I don't know, 60 to 100 feet tall and 60 feet wide if you leave them alone. The one we're looking at now has a trunk that's probably, what do you say, about 2 feet in diameter? And it's been flat-topped and turned into a disc. And it doesn't look like a plant. And somebody's spending time hacking it and producing green waste And the only value I can see is, I don't know, if you had a really big beer stein, you might be able to balance it on top.
Well, I think you've really proven that there can be life on other planets here, because this looks like a flying saucer, okay? But I haven't seen this in a magazine anywhere. But so where do these ideas come from to shape these things into, like, flying saucers? Or you even have one here. Let's see. It's called The New Beginnings of a New Alphabet. It really does, like, look like some Arabic.
Yeah, this is Pyracantha. And what we're looking at is like a series of Dr. Seussian slingshots with what also look like octopus suckers at the end. You know how they sort of flare out? It's great at a sushi bar. And when I looked at it, it really looked like somebody had mashed up some Arabic alphabet with ancient runes, you know, like for, I think it's the Nordics had runes. And it's just these bizarre strokes. And, you know, again, it's in the eye of the beholder, but what really irks me is somebody is paying a plant janitor, I don't call them gardeners, somebody is paying a plant janitor to do this when they could actually be doing something constructive. I don't know. I'd love to interview the neighbors someday.
I was just going to ask you if you had a chance to talk with any of the people, if you've actually been so bold to go up and knock on somebody's door.
No, I'm a complete coward. I'm non-comfortable. Although, no, funny story. One of the sites that's one of the photos that's here is one of my favorite plants. It's called Lauropetalum, Chinese fringe flower, and it's a beautiful, graceful, delicate, but actually tough plant. It has purplish leaves like a purple leaf plum, and these fringe flowers, sometimes pink, sometimes white. It's a plant that looks like you took a perfect Japanese maple, lacy. And if you just left it alone, it's a little bit open, it's wispy. This person planted them along the end of the street and pruned each one a foot from each other like little Quonset huts or Wonder Bread loaves. So I'm driving around in my car looking for photographs. I go on binges in the morning. I go looking for, you know, crimes against horticulture, so I have stuff to put up here. And I noticed this. Actually, I'm driving up the hill, and this guy, a little bit overweight, a little bit older than me, is huffing and puffing up a hill on his bicycle. I'm thinking to myself, hey, this guy's got some huevos. He's doing good. And I drive about another block, and I see this gut-wrenchingly hideous, stupid, crenellated loaf pan of a landscape sitting there. And I pull over, and I grab my camera just as this guy on the bike pulls into that driveway.
Oh, no.
And I'm crouched down with the camera ready to take a picture because I think it's so, you know, ridiculous. And he gets off his bike and he walks toward me and he swells with pride because he figures I'm admiring his garden.
Oh, no.
And this is as bold as I get because I'm an honest guy, basically. And he said, oh, you're taking a picture of my landscape? And I smiled back at him and I said, yeah, this is really interesting.
That's cue for this really is ugly. Is that what that means, interesting?
It meant I didn't want to say anything cruel to his face. That's, I'd rather do it behind his back at my Flickr site.
On a podcast?
Site. Yeah, on
somebody
a podcast.
Somebody else's website?
Yeah. You know who you are. You're out there. You're listening to this. You're a big fan of Jamie's.
Okay, so I know that people are going to listen to this. And, you know, some people's responses might be like, well, who are you? And who are you, the expert, to say that somebody's plant is ugly? But, I mean, you've got some training. You know, you've got some...
Well, yeah, I've been in landscape design, landscape architecture since before I was born. I teach landscape design. I teach at college level. I teach adult ed. I lecture around. So other people look at my gardens. I design gardens for people, and they all think they're nice. So there's some agreement, I guess, that I have okay taste.
Yeah.
So that gives me a little bit of authority. But basically, I read somewhere that I am the world's authority on my opinion. It's been documented.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't want to listen to me, don't listen to me.
That's
but
right.
A whole bunch of people, when I teach about this stuff, they go, God, yeah, and that looks just like my house.
Well, so. And I think, you know, looking at some of these pictures, especially this one that we're looking here, just plain no. When, you know, somebody is shaping their shrub into what looks like...
No, 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 this is an olive tree.
Oh, this is...
You look
I'm
at
sorry.
A Tuscan landscape and you see these beautiful old... olive
that
trees.
Is an olive tree?
This is an olive. What we're looking at, folks, is 1, 2, 3, 4 branches that go up to about 10 feet tall and then make an absolute question mark turn down. And at the end of these, like hanging reading lamps, you know those 70s reading lamps where it comes up and you've got like a globe hanging at the end that shines down? It's like those. So I looked at this and I thought this would make a wonderful lamp. I wonder if they've actually put lights up inside the foliage. But I mean, this looks like somebody who was raised on Dr. Seuss and LSD decided to become a plant pruner. I mean, there's no justification for this whatsoever.
Well, I think that, because I'm going to have these pictures that we're talking about on the podcast page, so people are going to see, and I think that there's going to be a resounding, you know, agreement that what we're talking about is.
It's not, Jamie, I got to warn you, it's not going to be 100%
agreement. Okay, you're right, okay. It's going to be pretty darn close because
yeah.
I can't imagine. But, you know, there are lessons to be learned from pruning your bushes and your trees into wacky shapes. I mean, when you were talking to me about this ground cover that we're looking at
okay.
that somebody planted in a sidewalk. And
right.
This isn't right.
No. The plant we're looking at, it's a white flowering form of a real popular plant in California and in not heavily frosted areas. We're not talking about frosted frosted flakes. We're talking about places where you get frost.
Yes.
This is Lantana monovidensis, and it's the white flowering variety of it. If you put this plant out in the middle of a field somewhere, it'll get about 4 feet across and maybe, I don't know, 12 inches high. It just sort of spreads out a lot and mounds up a little bit.
Okay.
So you take a plant that wants to be 4 feet across and you put it in a parkway planter with a street tree. It's about a 5x5 planter, and you stick about 140 of them in there, which
right.
is what this looks like.
Yeah.
So here's one plant, 3 inches from its neighbor. Plant A wants to get 4 feet across. Plant B wants to get 4 feet across. 5 seconds after going in the ground, they ram into each other. So where do they go but straight up? So the plant you wanted to be a 12-inch ground cover is now 15 feet tall, and
now a climber.
Right, and it's trying to grab little children off the sidewalk. So the gardener has to assert dominance and bring it back to the edge of the concrete.
Yeah.
So all you see left is all the brown dead sticks that are underneath. It's like, and they'll do it week after week, and the person who owns the gas station that this is in front of is going to pay them a check every month to make it as ugly as it can possibly be. So it's just this weird, you know, what it comes down to is I think people just don't understand plants at a fundamental level. And they've also seen so much crap out there that they're willing to accept that this is okay.
Right.
And I think that's what gets me so upset. I want to, you know, there's people who are into, who bark and rage about slow food and people who bark and rage about various things. My thing is that I think gardens are I think we have gardens because we want to have nature around us or something like nature. So to take plants that are natural and stick them in a situation where they can't be natural is just, you know, kind of stupid. I have a
right.
bumper sticker in mind for this whole campaign. It's the word.
Don't say it.
No?
Somebody might steal it.
Oh, it's okay. Stupid, first word. Then the symbol for equals, the equal sign. And after it, the word ugly. Stupid equals ugly. If you don't know what you're doing, you generally end up, at least in gardening, making things that are really ugly.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you, Billy.
Yeah.
And you're a funny guy. You're a funny guy. You make me laugh.
Hey, I'm making you laugh.
But I mean,
why a duck?
Anyway, yeah. That's another podcast, okay. All right?
Tune in when Jamie and I do our Marx Brothers imitations.
But your goal with Crimes Against Horticulture is not to, like, make people feel bad about their gardens, but you're really trying to teach lessons here because, I mean, that's what you're best at, right? I mean, is that...
I'm two things. I'm an egomaniac, and I'm a teacher at heart. And this brings the two together. It's perfect.
And you're having fun doing it.
You bet. I'm going to make $1 million.
Oh,
and I'll remember.
Was that your goal?
I will remember you when... What's your name again?
Jamie. Stop it. All right. Well, that's enough. I've had enough of you.
Okay.
It's been fun.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I've been thrown out of nicer places than this.
We're done now. Thanks.
Okay.
I've seen some pretty bad whack jobs around my neighborhood, but never as creative as Billy's subjects down there in Santa Barbara. But Robin, you had mentioned your neighbor has a very carefully crafted cloud tree. What's this all about?
So here's the deal. It from a distance, you don't know what the hell this plant is. And you get up close to it, and what you realize it is it's a cloud-pruned holly tree. And it is insane. Like the trunk, like this big. And then it goes up, and all the branches go out, and then there's a puff of holly. Like it is a work of art. And here's the deal. The guy that takes care of it is got to be like 70 years old. And he's super skinny, tan, leather skin, running around in like 007 tighty whities. And that's how he gardens.
It's like, crazy. A holly tree?
A holly tree. But the thing is it's been done properly. Like, I would never do this, but it's been done properly. So the tree is actually incredibly healthy, but it's still crazy pruning. I have yet to have a conversation with him, but it's just stunning. I really, you're going to have to look at the pictures to see, to understand.
Yes, people, you have to see this, and we will have them on the podcast page of the right way to do it. But seriously, I mean, take caution. This is not for beginners.
No, I wouldn't take this on. I mean, he's got to go out there every year and meticulously care for this tree. And I'm not saying that you should neglect the trees that you have and that you're caring for otherwise, but this is, you know, fine pruning at its finest, even if it does look like a crazy whack job went after it.
That's great. You have been like a kick in the pants to talk with about pruning. It's funny to talk about whack jobs in a very constructive manner. So thank you for allowing me to do that on the show with our listeners, Robin. Once again, you can find Robin on her website, gardenmentors.com. And she also blogs for gardenhelp.org. And that is where you guys can go on there and find some helpful information of how to prune in really any garden.
Any garden, absolutely, yeah.
Any garden, any topic, anything. And then if you need some help, there is a resource there as well. Just contact people. And I also want to mention, don't overlook your local extension services. They actually have pruning classes, compost classes, you name it. Go in there, ask. Even if they don't offer a class that you're interested in, go in there and ask. And I don't know, maybe they can drum up some interest and create a class that everybody can benefit from in your community. So I want to thank you again, Robin, for joining us on Nest in Style.
And always a pleasure.
Join us for our next episode where we hear all about Teresa's trip to Bologna, Italy. And we'll also kick off the holiday season by discussing some entertaining tips. Until next time, go grow something.